Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers. It's me, Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. It's 2024. Let's do this. Here's the credits, of course. Mike Rickberg sang that song at the beginning, and he wrote that song, and he sang it with Sarah Cohen, his wife. And he will sing the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the program. Also, Patrick Brady, still putting this together. Video, audio, all of it. He's amazing. So, and Vilmos doing JackieCationStore.com. Squarespace is doing the regular Jackie Cation page, and I'm thinking of moving the Dork Forest and DorkForest.com away from WordPress because it's driving me nuts. But those are the credits. But if you go to JackieCation.com, you can get Dork Forest merch. You can get my stand-up merch. You can get my stand-up CDs and DVDs, which you'd have to have devices for those. You can also see videos and find out any number of things. I have another podcast called The Jackie and Laurie Show, but The Dork Forest is the flagship. 18th year, we're doing it, you guys. You can go to my Bandcamp or my YouTube for extra content. Please donate, is what I'm saying. It's 2024, and I think we've been in this long enough. Why don't you guys, everybody send me $100? That's what I'd like you to do. You can PayPal me. There's links all over the pages. You can Venmo me at Jackie Cation. You can find me at a stand-up show and hand me a sweaty wad of 20s. Do something. But I love doing the show. I would love to make some money, is what I'd like to do. In other news, I'm sure there's more things that I should talk about, but I can't think of them. But let's listen to who's going to dork out about something, because that's my favorite part. Thanks for listening, you guys. You're all great. Let's get into the show. I'm not going to feel bad about holding this cup of coffee in my hand as I intro my guest for this week. Welcome to the Dork Forest, Rangers. With me, Mr. Connor McLaughlin, who won the lottery of email. And because anybody could be on the show, but you just have, the scheduling is the hardest. Connor McLaughlin, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Jackie. Yeah, this was a really great set of happenstance.
Yeah, you emailed me like half an hour ago. I was like, I need an episode. The woman who I was supposed to record with, I'm a lovely woman, clearly not working out, will do it again. And I was like, okay, I have a list as long as my arm, or there's the squeaky wheel that just came in my email. Connor, you enjoy coffee, and you were willing to wait while I went and made some coffee. All right. You are at Coffee with Dr. Connor, COFFEEWITHDRCONOR, and that'll be in the notes. And you do sort of it's a new, like, you have a job, but then you also have this sort of new hobby within your job of introducing and talking about coffee.
Yeah.
What? Okay, I've had two coffee dorks on before. One, a guy who owned a coffee roaster in Seattle.
Okay.
And it was when I was trying to do destination dork forests, where I would go to people's places and then just sort of carry a thing and interview them. And that didn't take. There's probably three or four episodes. There was a train episode. The guy never turned the train on, but I did learn a lot about toy trains. And then the coffee one, which was loud, because there was a lot of grinding going on. And then the other episode about coffee that people might want to know about is Andy Kindler. Andy Kindler is a coffee nerd and has one of those bulbous things that you pour and then you pour and then you pour. You know what I'm talking about?
I think so. It's probably one of a couple of things. And I've probably seen whatever it is you're referring to. I probably have seen it and had coffee from it.
Oh, fair enough. Okay. Well, let's start with the beginning. What, I know that my brothers to this day, and I'm in my 50s, say, you're old enough to drink coffee? Because I'm the youngest. And then the other thing they say is, when I drink coffee, because I get it with either whole milk or cream in it, they're like, why don't you just get a chocolate milk? Why would you? That's not how adults drink coffee. They drink it black. And so there's some mocking happening in my family about coffee. What is your family dynamic with coffee? Is there one?
Yeah. So I think like most people, so I was born in the 80s. I'm, you know, an early 80s kid. My parents were born in the 50s. My parents are like post-war babies. So we had Folgers and I thought that tasted terrible without, you know, cream and sugar and basically tasting like a candy bar. So that was what I thought coffee was for a very long time. When I met the person who is now my spouse, she had previously been employed at Williams-Sonoma and had, you know, this magical coffee set up with a grinder and a French press. And it just blew my mind that coffee like could be good. And so that's
amazing.
Kind of set me off and running. About almost 20 years ago.
Do you still, that was almost 20 years ago. And does she still have that setup? Does she still enjoy that setup? And what was it a Williams-Sonoma like Keurig or something?
No, it was, she had a French press that was just like a glass kind of cylinder that you dump the coffee in and then pour hot water on for a couple of minutes and then press. And she was the first person that I ever, and she was the first person that I had ever met who had their own coffee grinder. We still have it. Right now, it's a backup because I have just gone way off the deep end and upgraded our home kit pretty extensively.
Oh, my gosh. All right. I thought you were going to say what I said because I have a coffee grinder. And I have this to say. It's not a backup. It's up high. It's up high where I never use it. I'm going to, before we get into your coffee thing, because you brought up coffee and this podcast in the 11th hour is really about me. I have a coffee that I had in Hoi An, Vietnam. And I was like, this is delicious. Is there chocolate in this? And they're like, no, there's no chocolate in it. Turns out there's a little bit of chocolate in it. And I've always been a snob about flavored coffees until the introduction of this item right here, which I get mailed to me every 2 years, 20 pounds at a crack. So I have 20 of these in my freezer. And I sometimes make Vietnamese coffee. And sometimes I just put two of Cafe Bustelo espresso and one of those. And then I drip it up and then I drink it hot in a pint glass or with ice. So now you know what I sort of have. What do you have?
Too much, probably. I have one of those sort of small bookshelves that's really designed for like DVD collections. Back when having like a DVD collection was a thing, I have one of those that is just all of my coffee stuff. So it is about 3 feet high and about 2 feet wide. And is just coffee making things, coffee serving things. It's a lot.
Okay.
So she
introduced you to decent coffee.
Like coffee that you make spot. That, you know, you don't just
wander around
like
and definitely talk over me because it's pretty grim. I'm going to let you talk because I am like this. So you go wherever you need to go and I won't try to make it linear as I'm desperately tempted to do. It doesn't matter. Go.
My spouse, she introduced me to coffee that you make sort of on the spot, in the moment, like, you know, that's a thing you do in the morning. It's not just scoop it with a spoon and chuck it into the Mr. Coffee machine, which is what my parents did, or my mom did. My dad wasn't a coffee drinker. And so, you know, after a while, I got curious, like, why is this so much better? Well, if, you know, you grind it fresh, it doesn't lose a lot of the aromatic compounds. It doesn't, you know, it gets stale slower because the beans are whole. You know, she explained all of these things to me that she had used in her sales career when she was working in sales at Williams-Sonoma. And eventually I started getting curious and like going online and reading some more. I had hit a patch of unemployment for a little while. And so I was just home all day by myself and You can only apply for so many jobs. You can only apply for so many jobs before you sort of exhaust the opportunities for the day. And so I was like, well, I got to learn about something, or I want to do something. So I really leaned into coffee as a hobby, and so started learning about the different ways that you could make it, and started acquiring all sorts of brewers. So for the most part, our home stuff is all of the pour overy type of thing. So we have several French presses. I've got all of the like dripper cones that you put on top of a mug or on top of a carafe that you then pour the water manually over.
Why different size French presses? Are they because of different number of people, or just did you get gifted things like when you start collecting unicorns?
More the latter. All of ours are about the same size. So before we were married, we kind of had two of everything, so that no matter whose house we were staying at, we had coffee stuff. And then when we got married and moved to California together, that happened in the other order. We moved to California and then got married. But we still had kind of two of everything, or two of a lot of things. And so a lot of the seconds, or sometimes the thirds, because we also both have the collector bug. So when there's a thing we like, we tend to want to get a lot of them, or have all the different iterations and versions of it. So we have a glass one that we are really gentle and careful with. We have a stainless steel one that's double walled, so it keeps the coffee hot for hours because in Southern California, it gets so cold that we really have to worry about thermal loss.
And then do you have a plastic one for when you break the glass one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else you got?
I have
just so Rangers know, there's a small satellite delay on this particular episode. So we're not awkwardly trying to talk to each other. We're made awkward because of the internet. Though we might talk awkwardly to each other if we were in the same room, Connor McLaughlin. But yes, please tell me what other ways are there to prepare coffee besides Mr. Coffee and a French press?
The funny thing is that every other way that there is to make coffee is just kind of a variation of those two things. And then sort of over here, you have espresso. An espresso is its own thing. And I don't do espresso at home because I don't have the counter space, and working in public education does not afford me the budget to do good espresso at home.
Right. So, what makes good espresso?
Good espresso really requires a really well-built machine that's going to make water temperature really put water at a very specific temperature and hold it there. And it's got to be able to push the water through the coffee at a relatively high degree of pressure. And a lot of the
I've just had another cup of coffee delivered to me, just so you know.
I love it.
This is my our cousins are in town. He's like, I'm going to Starbucks right now. And I was like, do whatever you want to do. And you, no barking. Okay, next. Okay,
I wish the
water has to
that.
Be at a very specific level.
It has to be at a very specific temperature. And it's got to have, it's got to have a strong enough pump to push the water through the coffee at a relatively high amount of pressure, between 6 and 9 bars, which more physics oriented people than me, but it's somewhere between 150 and 180 foot pounds of pressure, is how it's been explained to me. So it's a lot. It's more than you can do as a human being.
Wait. Okay. So here's the other thing. It turns out as we go through at minute 12, these are the other things I know about coffee. Mm-hmm. Especially espresso, which when we were kids, we would call it, Turkish, not Turkish, Armenian coffee, because we were full of rage. And but that is espresso, right?
No.
Turkish coffee is not?
It's similar. So Turkish coffee is ground to make Turkish coffee, or the Turkish preparation of coffee, or to your point, the Armenian coffee. Understandable bit of rage.
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
it's kind of like a French press in that, like, it's a pot that you pour coffee in and pour water over and then dispense the brewed sort of coffee out of it a little bit later. Espresso is made really by, like, just having a ball of coffee and pushing water through it at such high pressures that the water also erodes the coffee and sort of makes something else out of it. The similarity between them is that you grind the coffee, like, fantastically fine. A lot of people would probably, like, see coffee ground for espresso and for Turkish style coffee and say, like, oh, they're pretty much the same thing. When you get really deep into the weeds, when you get really deep into the weeds, you end up knowing that actually you grind Turkish coffee finer than you grind espresso, and that it would, like, Turkish style coffee would actually choke an espresso machine pretty intensely.
Oh, do we just get all stuck in it? Interesting.
Yeah, because it would be fine that you couldn't get anything through it.
Oh, weird. Okay. So, and here's what, what they do at Starbucks and other baristas will get, they'll go and they'll get the tick, 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 tick. Espresso falls into the cuppy thing. They put it, they grab, like a pat down thing, a weight, and then they pound it down and then they attach it to a machine, which has a pump that has a lot of pressure. And what it's doing, because it's not putting a lot of water through it.
No.
Right?
No, it's usually about like 30 to 45 milliliters, which is like 2.5 ounces. 2 to 2.5 ounces.
Like little.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it and, so and then they throw those grounds away.
So that's where the pressure comes in, because you're using not a ton of coffee. It's usually about like 15 to 18 grams, unless you're in Italy where it can be as low as 7. Because they can make like really, really strong or small coffees. But they are taking a relatively little bit of coffee and pushing a relatively little bit of water through it. But because they're pushing it so hard, all of that water takes a lot of coffee with it, or takes a lot of the flavor with it. Whereas in a Mr.
Right,
Coffee,
it must. It does.
Yeah. Whereas with a Mr. Coffee, you've got a lot more coffee and you've got a lot more water, but because you're just sort of using just gravity to slowly let the water move through the coffee, you need more of it in order to get out of it all the good stuff and to make it taste sort of strong enough.
Okay. Which is why with a press pot, you could just let it sit to whatever strength you like tea. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when a lot of people talk about making coffee, they talk about the sort of three variables of it. And there's time, temperature, and turbulence. And so with espresso, you have a lot of turbulence because you're like just smashing all of that water through it very, very quickly. You still need a relatively high temperature because you're trying to do it very quickly. You know, your optimal espresso time is like 30 to 35 seconds to pull a shot. Since your time is very short, you need a very high temperature and a lot of turbulence. Whereas with like a French press or when people are making cold brew takes like 24 hours. Since you don't have a lot of turbulence because you're just letting it sit there and you're doing it with really low temperature water, like room temperature or fridge temperature, you need to expand that time like fantastically long in order to have it taste like anything other than just like dirty water.
Yeah, yeah. I was given a cold brew kit during lockdown by my brother Phil. So I made cold brew and then I drank it like it was a pot of coffee. And then I didn't sleep. So it was not my finest. It was not good. I had to put that one up high too. What about the two I have a quick digress into the, you know, the metal where it's not a percolator, though I do have a question about that. It's two pieces of it's two bodies. Like you unscrew the bottom and you put the grounds on the bottom and then you put the water in the top and screw that together. And you, I don't know if you put it on the stove. Yeah. You put it on the stove.
Yeah.
What is that called? So, I have one of those.
I do too. Those are, I think that the, they're called a lot of different things, and depending on who you talk to, they'll call it different things. But generally, that one's called a moka pot.
Okay.
Although my friend who grew up in Mexico City just called it something else, and I'd never heard anybody call it that before, and now I can't remember it. So I'm going to text her whenever we get done and be like, what was that word you used? Because it was a really helpful descriptor. Right. But yeah, so that
is it a percolator?
So yes. So basically the two ways of making coffee, if we were going to like distill them down into like two easy categorizations, one is immersion, and that's like a French press or cold brew, 'cause all of the coffee is immersed in all of the water and it just hangs out there. And the other kind is percolation, which is any time that like the movement of water through the coffee is what does the work. And so with the moka pot, yeah, you build up a bunch of pressure with the boiling water and then it sends it up through the coffee and you out the other end get the basically the water with some eroded coffee in it that makes it taste good. And so it's sort of like a reverse of the Mr. Coffee thing. Instead of gravity pulling it through, you're using pressure to push it up.
Right, right. And do you ever think about like in old cowboy times, how they didn't ever think, like when the Mr. Coffee was invented, everyone was like, oh, then I could just pour hot water over it. I don't have to get a fire going. I could just make water hot. Then why wasn't, I wonder why the pour over wasn't invented in the old West by Cook. Cookie.
So I don't, this is actually a thing I don't know. Like I know about the pour over thing being a thing in Japan in like the 50s, 60s, 70s. And then it kind of went away in this. I'm repeating information that somebody else told to me, so it's possible I could get this wrong because it was, I'm just sort of going to say
right, we don't have a second source. Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. Sure.
But it was that like in the 50s and 60s, you know, it was okay, I'm going to make one pot of coffee. This, I don't need a machine to do it. We don't need all this electricity. I can just boil a kettle and pour some water over some coffee and get a cup of coffee. And then in the 80s and 90s, when all of those folks had kids, those kids were like, well, that's what my parents do. So I want like Mr. Coffee, or I want, you know, Folgers or whatever, because that's not what my parents
instant.
Do.
Yes.
And then when those folks had kids who are now like, you know, my age, those are the folks who were like, oh, well, this stuff that my grandparents were doing was really interesting. And you like, and the craft of coffee kind of caught up. So in a lot of ways, a lot of things that were happening in Japan have sort of spread, and other people have sort of, oh, wow, like what they were doing is really, really cool. My wife, who is Japanese American, also from time to time, when I'll be like talking about some coffee thing, she's like, you know, that's like Japanese teaware, right? Like Japanese people have been doing what you're talking about with tea for hundreds of years, right? And I was like, and typically, you know, as a white American who grew up in the Northeast, I'm mostly like, yes, now that you say it, I very much understand. And it seems obvious. And also my unawareness is very clear to me right now.
It's patent that I grew up in this fishbowl. And thank you for pointing out this other fishbowl. And I can now see it for some reason, because it's been pointed out and I am not a monster. But sometimes we all have to have, it's a learning curve. We all have to learn. Mm-hmm. So I get that. Yeah.
That's actually one of the things that I really love and there's percolation. About coffee. Yeah. Just the thing you said that like, it's this ongoing learning curve that I think is really interesting. Like I can do it every day. And I can be relatively good at it. Like, I think I can make a decent cup of coffee at the snap of a finger. But there are also so many other things to like keep getting better with it, or to like keep trying. Because, you know, like I had a coffee earlier today from a place that I'd never had before. And now I'm like, oh, well, what else is there out there? Or what else is there to experience? And because it's so vast, there's always new things to learn. And I like being on that learning curve.
Have you ever thought about going to like a world tour of coffee plantations? Like, I want to go to Sumatra. I want to go to Africa and Ethiopia, and I want to see them being made.
I do. I think that would be really cool. And some of my friends who work in coffee have done that. Thing that I'm, because they were working in the coffee industry, so they were going and seeing like what crops the places they were working were buying from. And thing that I am really hesitant about with that, or at least like the thing that keeps me from jumping at doing it for like my next vacation, is that that's sort of become a thing. And so there are also a lot of people who are like being exploitative about it, which is also a huge part of the history of coffee, is that like it's kind of really bound up in a lot of exploitation and a lot of colonialism.
Yeah, and it's not supportive. It's been exploited.
Okay, if I'm going to do that, I really want to do some research to make sure that like whatever money I'm spending is going to the people who are doing the hard work and that they're being compensated. And because I'm not that much of a planner, that sounds like a lot of work to plan a vacation. And so I'm like, you know, I'm just going to not do that until I'm a little more certain that I can like participate ethically.
Right. Just go on a whale watch. You're good. You're right down there in San Diego, I think. Right. It's
I have been to a bunch of the places that are considered some of the best coffee shops in the world. And one of the things I do whenever I travel, which I do sort of often, mostly for work, but I can usually like tag a day or two of vacation onto it if I'm, you know, good about planning. I will try to figure out like where are a couple of the really, really good coffee shops here so that I can like take a train ride or maybe like a little day trip to them.
Who is saying the best coffee shops in the world? Are there obviously like wine or tea or cigars or whatever? There's somebody going, this is the finest coffee shop. Where? Name it. Where? Talk to me.
when I was getting into coffee, my spouse gave me a book that was basically like an almanac of the best coffee shops on every continent. And I have little sticky notes on all of the pages with all of the ones I've been to, with like a little note about when I went and what I enjoyed about it. So this one, it's not like these are the five best or this is the one best one, but it sort of says, okay, if you're in, say, Spain, and I've never been to any of the ones in Spain, I haven't yet gotten to go to Spain, but it's, if you're in Spain, here's some really good ones in Barcelona. Here's some really good ones in like the Catalan region, which I think Barcelona might be in. I'm bad at geography. But it lays out like all of the different kind of big cities in a lot of the countries and says, if you're here, you should check out like these four or five places. And when she gave me the book, I like right afterwards kind of went on a trip to New Zealand and ended up, this was in that book and I really liked it. And I went through the ones for the US and was like, yep, been to that one, been to that one, been to that one, been to that one. Most of them are in the Bay Area.
Oh, are they? What's the name of the book?
It's in my office. Yeah, what's the name of the book? It's in my office and I don't have it in front of me.
There's probably an updated version of it and everybody can Google. Yeah. And it's probably, you could Google best coffee shops around the world and Google will suggest a book.
somebody just came out with a like top 100. It might've been coffee roasters, but a lot of them have coffee shops attached to them in the world. And it was like a hotly debated thing in the coffee internet about like who was left off and who was and who should have been higher and yada, yada, yada. I think the cool, another one of the things I really like about coffee is that it's also really comes down to taste at the end. So I can talk about the things that I like and I enjoy. And actually, like, the other person who lives in my apartment with me likes very different things. So sometimes it's, well, is this a thing that we're both going to enjoy? And if this is a thing that only I'm going to like, I can put this away for when I'm making coffee just for me and it'll be a me thing. But then if I'm making stuff just for her, I might do
it
this way.
What are the notes that you're looking? Yeah, what are the notes you're looking for?
So I tend to like stuff that has a lot of like florality and a lot of like kind of fruit notes. So things that might be kind of punchy, like a strawberry or a green apple. Things that are going to be not necessarily bitter, but they're going to be acidic in some of those ways, or things that might have a lot of tea-like qualities.
Now, are they in? Is this just a coffee bean with that flavor, or are they infused with that?
A little bit of both, mostly the former. So one of the things that people have found a bit more recently, and by recently I maybe mean in the last like 15 to 20 years, is that if you don't roast coffee until it is like black as tar, but if you roast it what would be pretty light, maybe like to the color of cinnamon or a little bit darker, that it retains a lot more of the things that people talk about when they talk about wine. You know, you can taste a lot more of like the place it comes from, and you can differentiate where it comes from a little bit differently, because you're not burning away all of the flavorful things that are in it. So I tend to like stuff that is on the really, really light side, because there is so much more to experience from that. My spouse tends to like stuff that's a little bit darker, a little bit more chocolatey, a little bit more nutty flavored. And I like that stuff too. So it's like, okay, these are the things that we can enjoy together. And these are some things that I might enjoy.
Right, you can mix them up.
And that are a little more out there, a little bit more wild, a little bit more interesting. To the second part
of
your question.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Sort of.
Yes.
Some of what, like, and this is like a very recent phenomenon. So this is maybe in the last like 5 or so years. What people have also realized is that when you're processing the coffee, so before it's even roasted, when they're picking it from the trees and they're getting it out of the fruit that it's in, because coffee is just the seeds of the plant dried out and roasted, that when you're
I think I saw a thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when you're washing it and when you're doing all of the processing to get it ready for roasting, if you say put fruit in there with it, that will change the flavor characteristics, as opposed to,
like, if you store it with a fruit or a flower, kind of.
Yeah. And people are finding that if you store it at different temperatures, that'll affect it differently. And if you store it dry versus wet. So that's the sort of thing of the moment in a lot of coffee, is that people are really doing a lot of experimentation with what you do before the coffee is roasted and how does that change or amplify. Because for a lot of things, it doesn't necessarily change it, but it like turns it up a lot. Or it'll turn up certain aspects of it.
I'm gonna pull us real quick out of the dork well that we are very much in, that I love. But just to ask this, what are you drinking? Like, where are you buying? If it's not Folgers, is there a grocery store coffee that you will purchase?
So that's one of the great things about living, especially in California, is that there's actually really good coffee at most grocery stores. A lot of the grocery stores near me actually carry local coffee roasters. So you can, like, I was at Sprouts earlier today, which is a Southern California chain for anybody who doesn't live in Southern California. And the Sprouts that I go to has a little section of the coffee that's like San Diego coffee places. And they'll have bags that they went and picked up like down the road. So in a pinch, that's great because it's pretty fresh. It's local. It's supporting local businesses, things like that. Also because I live in a major metropolitan area. There are lots of these places are also, I could also just go right to them and buy it from them. And because I've been kind of involved in going to coffee places and talking to owners and stuff, some of the people who own some of these places are also friends of mine. So I can text them and say, hey, I need to come pick something up. Like, can I pop by or, you know, I really like that. Can I have another bag? Yada, yada.
Okay. So you would recommend you buy a locally roasted coffee and start there kind of in a, if you kind of want to try something super fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because if it's roasted locally, it doesn't have to travel very far. You know, the downside of a lot of grocery store and, you know, like buying it from Target, and you can get actually like very high quality coffee at Target. The problem is you don't know how long it's been sitting there. It could be a month old. It could be a year old. It could have sat in a warehouse in 100-degree heat, and you wouldn't know that. And it might not taste as good as you want it to. Whereas if you go to the same place, you know, and buy it directly from them, you can actually say, you know, when was this roasted? Is this a week old? Is this a month old? Was this in the back under a blanket for a year?
Right. It's all of my coffee's in the freezer waiting for me just because it's coming from Vietnam. You're right. It's going to be a little older. And it just makes me, though I do, it's delicious. Mm-hmm. I like it.
And
it is
very I have been allotted one rail on the door of the freezer in my apartment. So when that gets full, it's
because otherwise you would write.
Mm-hmm. I would take
stop
over
buying.
The whole
drink coffee. Don't buy any more coffee.
Yeah.
Yes. The rule had to be made for a reason. Yes. Mm-hmm. I get that. So you're buying it from local roasters or local. Is there a country that you prefer?
My favorite coffees have tended to be coffees from Ethiopia. Some of the best coffees I've ever had have been Ethiopian coffees. I have most consistently said I love that. So if I go out somewhere that I've never been and they have an Ethiopian coffee on the menu, that is usually the first thing that I'll get. As a way of trying to understand what they're doing, because I know that generally this is a thing that I like and I've had a lot of success and enjoyment drinking these.
And how do you like your coffee prepared? Are you drinking it black? Mm-hmm. Are you drinking it with any sort of dairy or anything?
I usually drink it black because I'm mostly drinking like filter coffee. When I get an espresso, that will be when I, get like a latte or a cappuccino, because they're delicious. But in my like day-to-day coffee I'm making at home or coffee I'm making at work, it's all filter coffee. So I, just drink it black, which was really came about because I was trying to cut down on sugar. And then realized like, oh, some of these are actually sweet by themselves and, you know, they're not as sweet as a mouthful of sugar, but they're also not harsh and bitter, and they don't just taste like motor oil like my mom's Folgers did. So I can enjoy them without having to adulterate them as much.
I'll let you talk about whatever you want in a minute, but here are my questions. Have you been to Italy?
No.
And have you had a tiny coffee in Italy, and how long does it take you to drink? And are you supposed to drink it super slow? I have a drinking problem and tend to drink everything super fast.
Have not been to Italy. though my friends who have told me it would be, particularly in Italy, it would be very rude to like nurse a tiny coffee, that it's called a shot for a reason.
Oh, there you go. Oh, good.
I have been to places that, you know, while not in Italy, sort of lean in that direction or sort of going for that kind of vibe. And they also tend to serve, even their shots of espresso are like, there's less in the cup. So it's I would have a really hard time getting more than about two sips out of it, just because it's such a tiny amount.
Right. You just tend to just drink it and then you're done. It's a tiny cup. Where, have you tried coffee in other countries?
Yes. I drank a lot of coffee when I was in New Zealand. Some of the best coffee I've ever had.
That's right.
And then last winter I was in Sweden, and was with some friends. Ooh. And said to a friend who lives in Sweden, you know, I'd really like to take a day trip over to Copenhagen. And she actually planned a walking tour of the city of Copenhagen that was routed around a bunch of coffee shops that she wanted to take me to.
I'm glad it wasn't like chew tobacco, but I had to go there. If your dorkdom is chewing tobacco, feel free to come on the show. So was it delicious coffee? I mean, in Copenhagen, there's also, I've never been to Copenhagen, but wherever you go in Europe, they're making fresh pastries. Mm-hmm. It's happening. Yeah. It's one of my favorite things about coffee. What do you think about coffee shop culture? What do you think about that?
That's one of the reasons that I like to go out so much, or like to tag extra days onto, like, oh, I'm in Chicago for a work thing. Can I dedicate a day to doing coffee stuff? Because I'm always really interested in what are folks doing in different places? What are the cafes in, you know, Portland look like? What do the cafes in Florida look like?
Right.
What is the coffee place town?
Yeah.
In like on the Gulf Coast of Florida, where there's like very little other than a Sam's Club and some car dealerships, but there's a coffee shop. So what is it? What's it like? Like, that's part of the fun, is just seeing, like, how is it different here?
I went to the town where Andy's parents grew up in Mississippi, called New Albany, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And there was one coffee shop on the main street, and they had an espresso machine, which was broken the first time I went there. And the next trip we went, and I just got a latte. I was just like, I would like something else. And because we were staying at a Hampton Inn. And so I just wanted a decent cup of coffee. And so I got the latte, and I turned to Andy and I said, if we lived in New Albany, Mississippi, I would live here in this room. And he said, we'll never live in New Albany, Mississippi, but it was nice to visit. Mm-hmm. What are your favorite towns? Can you remember any of the specific greatest coffee shops around the country that you've been to? Like in San Francisco, I'm going in 2 weeks. I'm going to San Francisco.
Oh, and San Francisco has like a bajillion great coffee shops. The one that I have been to in San Francisco that I enjoyed the most was called Verve. And they have been doing kind of like
it's called great Verve.
Yeah.
Good for them.
And they have been doing really exciting, interesting coffee for a really long time. They've been around forever and ever and ever. I also have a soft spot for Blue Bottle, and it like makes me very sad that they're now owned by Nestle, and Nestle is the like kind of, it's like a comic book villain of like an evil corporation, but in real life.
Wait, is Blue Bottle, a coffee shop is it a kind of coffee? Like, why would Nestle buy a coffee shop?
So Blue Bottle started in Oakland in the early 2000s and was one of the people that influenced a lot of what like modern coffee culture is. A lot of it is kind of based on Blue Bottle, sort of, like not just Blue Bottle, but they were one of like a handful of people that really like caused a shift in coffee culture in the U.S. And so Nestle, seeing an opportunity, kind of said, like, you know, we would like to buy it. And it made huge waves in the coffee world because they paid something like, I think it was like $700 million or something like that for it. Just some astronomical
right.
amount.
And the people of Blue Bottle. Money. Yeah. And Blue Bottle was like, I don't know how to say no. Take
yeah.
it. We'll
and
start over.
Yeah. yeah. And the guy who founded it, he's a guy named James Freeman, like seems to be doing, like is still doing a lot of really cool and interesting things and still like is involved in coffee, but he's not, you know, he doesn't run a coffee business anymore. Now he is kind of like a spokesperson, in a really interesting way.
Okay.
Like I have a soft spot for them. I really don't like giving my money to Nestle, so I try not to, but sometimes that's what there is unless you want to go to Starbucks, and I want to go to Starbucks even less than I want to give my money to Nestle. So when that's the bind that
here's
I'm
my
in.
Question about Blue Bottle.
Yeah.
Yes. It's is Blue Bottle an actual chain in San Francisco and Oakland?
Now it's a chain all over the world. So there are tons
oh,
of
Oh, is
them.
It? Okay.
Yeah, but it started in
okay,
Oakland.
I've never heard of it. That's weird.
I'm sure I know for a fact there are at least two in LA, but if I remember correctly, you live like in the okay. valley, and I don't think that there are any near there.
We just got a Phil's, Connor. We just got yeah. a Phil's. By the way, I'm talking with Connor McLaughlin. It's at Coffee with Dr. Connor, Coffee, COFFEE, with WITH, Dr. DR, CONOR. Do you have a doctorate by any chance?
I do. Not a helpful kind.
Ha! Perfect.
Yeah.
Right. And well, and not in, and probably not in coffee, but
no.
you get to be called Dr. Connor.
I do. Yeah. I have
because my
I have
brother has a doctorate. Yes.
And yeah, I have a PhD in leadership studies with a focus on leadership in higher education.
Well, thank goodness. It's yeah, I think he has a PhD in urban studies or econ or something like that. And he got it because my sister is a medical doctor and he didn't want her to be the only doctor. That's right. We're petty. Not we. I don't have a doctorate. I barely have a BA, you guys. It's plugging along. So here's what I want to know about the guy who sold Blue Bottle. I want him to have figured out the worth of that company, doubled it, got it from Nestle, and then donated half of it to something like water treatment plants that Nestle wants to own. Because Nestle is, they're the devil. They are not good. Nestle is not my favorite company. And there are many companies that are bad that I go to. That's right. I do try to avoid Nestle companies when possible, just because they're cartoonishly evil. It is weird. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They own water rights. I don't think anyone should get to own water rights.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really hard, thing to dig yourself out of, and they don't seem interested in digging themselves out of that hole. So
right. Right, they're just like, okay, I am Mr. Burns, and I will laugh all the way to my grave. And then they keep plugging along. So
yeah.
Okay, so now we have New Zealand that you've been to and Sweden that you've been to. Have you ever been to Mexico?
No. I have walked up to the wall. I've been all the way, but
right. Well, I got off in Cabo San Lucas once because I was doing a cruise ship. But I really don't feel like I've been to Mexico. I feel like I've been to Cabo San Lucas, its own country, and that feels like I was in Boyle Heights here in Los Angeles. So it's not. It just feels like a neighborhood. Anyway, have you been to Canada?
I have been to Canada. Had some very wonderful coffee in Montreal. Really, really want to. I'm told that I would love Vancouver and Vancouver's cafe culture. It's one of the places my partner and I really, really want to go on vacation.
Yeah,
because we both.
I've never been to.
Really
I've only been to Vancouver
time in Montreal
for a heartbeat.
And want to
yeah.
see the other cities in Canada, which we're also told we would enjoy quite a lot. So, yeah. Sure. Really want to visit Japan.
Capital of
really
Canada, Ottawa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, really I've never been to Japan.
Have never been to Japan. Really want to go to Australia. Australia's cafe culture is supposed to be just truly amazing. I just want to travel. I want
to
go
everywhere. I went to Australia and I had a flat white for the first mm-hmm. time in Melbourne. That was the first mm-hmm. place I ever had a flat white. And I was like, oh, this is exactly how I like a latte. Because mm-hmm. that's what, as far as I can tell, it's less foamy, but it's yep. the good coffee. And then I get more coffee and not a lot of foam because that's not what I'm looking for.
And if you were to ask an Aussie, they would tell you that is the first place that a flat white ever was. There is a deep, deep argument between Kiwis in New Zealand and Aussies in Australia about who invented the flat white. And whatever country you're in will tell you it was them. But a lot of it was kind of this response to those lattes of the 90s and the early aughts that were like a tiny bit of coffee, a tiny bit of milk, and a mountain of foam in a punch bowl. That they were just yeah. like, no, I just want a flat yeah. white coffee.
I would just like to drink some coffee. Yes. Mm-hmm. Hard agree. And I would like yeah. to thank the entire part of, you know, I forget what that's called. The Antipodes? I'm not pronouncing that right.
Antipodean. Antipodean is like the adjective right. form of it. Yeah.
I would
all
just like
Jeopardy
to thank
my mom
the people
made me
of Melbourne.
Watch is really paying off.
Yes. Oh, exactly. No kidding. My mother-in-law is watching it right now. Okay. Is there equipment that you have not explained to me? Because I got to ask all of my questions and you can talk again. So sorry.
That's okay. You don't have to be sorry. This was great. I think the only thing that I haven't haven't talked probably as much as I would is the importance of the grinder and like grinding fresh. Having a grinder was the thing that like changed my coffee experience. Just orders of magnitude more than anything else. Being able to sort of grind okay. it fresh, have like, you know, very, very fresh coffee. And that's usually
do you grind
the thing
it
that
per
I,
pot?
Yes. I usually grind it per cup. So if I'm I will make myself a cup of coffee in the morning. And then if I want another one, I will grind yeah. some more an hour later and do that.
How many beans is that? Is that 2 tablespoons? How do you know how many beans are in a cup?
So I weigh everything in grams because,
yes.
And again, I'm going to repeat something that somebody else said to me, so this is not an entirely original thought, but volume is not, it's very hard to be repeatable, whereas like weight, even across different coffees is, you know, 18 grams is 18 grams. And if it's 150 beans or 200 beans, you still have 18 grams of coffee. So I have a scale.
Okay.
And when I bought my first coffee scale was when my partner started saying that I had gone off the deep end and had like outpaced wherever she was.
Right. Did you tell her you were thinking about going into cocaine? No, it's fine.
I weigh it out and I have I know how much coffee I want to put in. I know how much I want to get out. And I, you know, brew with the appropriate ratios accordingly. And then I have the scale so that I can track how much coffee I'm putting in and how much water I'm putting in every time.
Okay. So if you have 18 grams of coffee, how much water are you putting in?
300 milliliters, which is about 10 ounces.
Okay. And thank you very much. One 10-ounce cup of coffee coming at me. Okay. I have a very old scale that might weigh grams. I don't know if I'll do this.
That's okay. But it's I basically like had to learn the metric system for this because most of the coffee drinking world works in the metric system. And so if you're reading anything yeah. from somebody who's not based in the US, they might give you the conversion in a parentheses, but most of the time it's just, these are the grams. This is the water temperature in Celsius. This is the, these are the milliliters.
Okay.
You do the conversion, you lazy American. Nobody says
can
that.
You, so it's like learning a new language, right? Right. Mm-hmm. No, but it's like learning a new language. Can you picture in your mind 300 milliliters? Can you picture in your mind 18 grams? Can you picture in your mind a meter? Can you picture in your mind how warm it is when it's 41 degrees Celsius?
So the temperature thing is the most recent thing. Like, I have changed a lot of like the weather on my phone to Celsius to try and like learn how to have that conversation with friends across the world. I can get pretty close to 18 grams of coffee. I've been like looking at 18 grams of coffee for a long time now. I'm okay at it. I can like guess at about 300 milliliters, but most of the time when I'm having to guess, I haven't had coffee, so I don't feel like it. And I'm like, there's a machine that will just do this for me. I do have like a...
But I was just wondering, do you...
Oh, go ahead. I think you were about to ask me the question I was going to answer.
I'm just wondering if... Okay, well, here's the question. Can you speak metric to people who are metric lovers or knowers instinctively, who are raised in metric?
Mostly about coffee. Not about much else. Like I said, I'm still trying to teach myself the weather. I have a bunch of friends who live around the world who will say things like, oh, it's 20 degrees out. And I'm like, oh, that sounds horrible. Are you... And they're like, no, it's so hot. We have the windows open. I'm like, oh, right. Because, yes, because 20 Celsius is very different than 20 Fahrenheit.
Right.
So I'm trying
to learn. It was 106 here yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was talking to some friends of mine in the UK about something else. Political. Yay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was like, it's 106 and the blank look. And I went, hey, Siri, what is 106 in Celsius? And it turns out it's 41 degrees, which is very, very warm, but not as warm as it could be. So, yeah.
Yeah. So
what would you recommend people do? Yeah.
I was just going to say, I can be like conversational around coffee in the metric system. That's kind of the only part of my life where it's like imperative that I learn metric or like need to be conversational in it. So I don't spend most of the rest of my life in metric. Although, like I said, I'm sort of trying to be a slightly better citizen of the world and like try to look at the weather in Celsius.
Right.
That's about it.
It feels to your question. Yeah, the short answer is no, but but we're all trying to, you know, because it does seem more exact, the metric system. I remember them trying to teach it to me when I was a child. Mm-hmm. So, but yes, I'm a huge fan of whatever effort you're making. By the way, we're at about 56 minutes. Is there anything you would like to tell the people of the Dork Forest about coffee that I have not grilled you about?
I maybe would just like to underline that, like, no matter where you live, there is probably a local business doing coffee where you live, and it would be really great to support them unless they are bad people in some other way. But as long as they are good people worth giving their money to, it would be great to support your local coffee shop, because coffee shops are like an incredibly hard business to make any money in. The returns on them are really minimal, and people who work in coffee don't make a lot of money. So any patronage that good people who are trying to do something for the community can get, I think, is really important. And I think that actually like brings me to a question that you had asked me a while ago that I wandered away from, about like cafe culture, in that I still really appreciate that cafes are these like community gatherings places. And that's part of what excites me about getting to go to cafes all over the world, because I'm fortunate enough to get to travel sometimes, is to see all the different ways that people come together and people socialize in these spaces over, you know, a coffee and a pastry or a coffee and a snack. So yeah, just
Yeah.
Support local cafes, support local people. There's probably somebody in your town doing it and not making enough from it. And so anything you can do to support them is a good thing.
Right. If you're going to spend $6 on a cup of coffee, you might as well go to the one that's locally owned instead of Starbucks. So
true story.
Because they could use the $6 probably more than Starbucks is doing fine. Mm-hmm. And they should pull out that logo. Used to have more boobs, the logo. but now they've zoomed in. They've zoomed into just her face. So I am a bit of the accident. Yep.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Please.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, I had this really odd experience recently where I went to this place in San Diego that I thought was a local cafe. But as I was walking in, I was like, that font on your sign looks oddly familiar. Like, why do I recognize that? And I go in and I'm looking at the menu and the font on the menu looks familiar. And I like just couldn't figure out. I was having this like odd deja vu experience. And I start asking the barista about their coffee, just like, you know, where's it from? You know, what is it? Because it just says coffee. And I don't remember what they said, but they said something that's like a lingo that you would only get if you were employed by Starbucks. Like, this isn't a thing that anybody else would say except Starbucks people. And so I was like, wait a second. Okay, so did you just like come up through Starbucks and now you work here? And then I was like looking around and I was like, no, this is a Starbucks. It's just not Starbucks. Like, the font on the sign was the Starbucks font. The food was a lot of the same kinds of food that is at Starbucks, but this place didn't say Starbucks anywhere on it. So I was either like, either y'all are like, are a Starbucks that's just not called a Starbucks, or you're like somehow trying to copy Starbucks, which it feels like they're lawyered up enough to like get at you for that. So I'm like, it was just really bizarre to be in this, like, this is what Starbucks thinks a local cafe looks like. And it was just this sort of like uncanny valley.
Weird.
Or like, it was a very like Stepford Wives-y kind of thing where it's like, it looks the same, but it's like, there's something just a hair off. And that hair is just enough to make it feel weird.
Did you just have to go, or did you just get a cup of coffee because you wanted a cup of coffee?
Well, it didn't click until after I had ordered. So I think I drank the coffee and sure. I don't know for sure, because I'm not a brain doctor, but I don't know if the coffee was actually bad or if I was just so annoyed that I had been like tricked into going to Starbucks that I didn't like it because of how annoyed I was.
Right. Well, and the experience is a whole experience, Connor. You know, it's not just the coffee. It's where you're having the coffee, the ambiance of the place, especially when you're in a cafe. You're just like, I'm the accidental tourist. So when I walk into a Starbucks in any city in the world, I'm just like, oh, this is actually quite soothing because I feel like I'm at home. But there's that. But yeah, it's a whole thing. Connor, it has been an hour. I appreciate how quickly you responded to my email. And this was fascinating. This was a delight. So thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you so much. This has been really fun.
And it's Connor McLaughlin, you guys. It's at Coffee with Dr. Connor, D-R, Doctor. Not doctor spelled out like Doctor Who. So it'll be in the notes. And this has been a delight. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other. Go for it.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
Well, there's such a long pause. I don't know if it's good for Patrick or bad for Patrick or good for me or bad for you.
Oh, it's good for me.
Well, I'm happy. I'm happy one of us is having a good time. This was an excellent episode of the Dork Forest. I usually talk to Andy Ashcraft for a couple of minutes. We don't know how long we'll do it, though. This could be the last one.
What? No.
Right.
Why?
Because I have to wait.
I make her wait at the beginning before I say, hi, Adal, how was the show?
And he's spelling Dal, D-A-H-L, by the way, because we went out for Indian food when we first were together.
No, that's not why.
I thought that was why.
No, no. The reason why is because I asked you on an email early on whether you slept like a burrito, a sandwich, or a pizza. And you said that you sleep more like a doll.
Oh, okay. But not an Indian food doll. So why?
No, you spelled it D-A-H-L.
Oh, interesting.
Because we were talking about foods. I was using a food metaphor, and you were riffing.
An email that we riffed in 2003.
Right.
Is the reason why 20 years later.
I call you doll.
You call me doll.
And I've called you doll ever since.
Ever since.
Hi,
and
doll.
I made up a different narrative for that. Hi. This particular episode was about coffee, which I enjoy. And you don't have any interest.
No.
Though you will, if you're very thirsty, have a sip of my iced coffee.
I want to like coffee.
Oh, no.
But I don't.
It's a gift that you don't, because I remember when Maria Bamford went out with, what was his name? But he turned her on to iced coffee, and now she's addicted to cold brew. So it's really for the best that it didn't happen. But this guy, Corey McLaughlin. Connor McLaughlin.
I think it's McLaughlin.
I got so invested in his last name that I got both names wrong.
Yes. Connor McLaughlin.
Connor McLaughlin, because you have the piece of paper in front of you.
I do indeed.
That's the log line.
So this is what she writes.
I write
the
down.
Show.
That's right.
And then, she has time code, and it also tells us whether he got a shirt.
Oh, right. Whether he wanted a Dork Forest t-shirt. And coffee money, which he was actually expected to get.
Yeah, yeah. Who's gonna say no to $20?
He has three press pots. He's got the press pot that they use carefully, the glass one. They have the plastic one, just in case they break the glass one. And then they have a thermal. Well, I think we have a glass and a plastic, because they were a gift. Once you like something as much as Connor likes coffee, people give you things.
It's true. That is true.
He has some sort of weird thermal press pot that's metal that keeps it hot.
Oh, that's
or
nice.
Cold or
that's
something.
Actually very good.
Yeah.
That seems like a good idea.
And then he has all the different ways for pour over.
Sure.
To do pour overs. And I don't believe he has a Mr. Coffee. And so we talked about, he mentioned a book that he later sent me what it was. It was A Lonely Planet, the 25 best coffee places in the world.
All right.
I believe. And I will have to say.
And now we're going on a tour.
And now, he's been to several. They went to New Zealand, and he said he had an excellent cup of coffee in New Zealand. He explained why it's called a flat white in New Zealand and Australia.
Okay.
It was because of how much lattes were very, very popular, but there was too much foam and there's a bit of rivalry.
Flat means no foam?
Easy foam, tiny row of foam, flat white. Yeah. So
not
it's a
fluffy,
latte.
As opposed to a fluffy white.
Exactly. Fluffy white would be a latte. And I like a flat white because I like more coffee than foam myself. Thank you very much. But both New Zealand and Australia claim to have invented the flat white. Just so you know.
We can't tell them apart anyway. So fine.
Oh, Australia, New Zealand.
Uh-huh.
I used to be able to. I could be taught again. So, and then what else? There was also... It's how he knows the metric system now. He makes one cup of coffee at a time, unless he's making it for him and his partner, his wife.
Ergo, then, he now knows the metric system.
Right, because he measures out grams and liters.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And pours in, he puts a certain amount of grams into the cone.
Sure.
A certain amount of liters into the cone.
Okay.
And then the perfect cup of coffee ensues.
Okay.
And then he also told me that I did not know this, that he will occasionally go to a small chain here in California called Blue Bottle.
Okay.
It's a San Francisco chain.
But
he told me that Nestle bought it. The Nestle company bought Blue Bottle.
A chain of cafes.
Coffee shops. Yeah.
Coffee shops. Weird. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, maybe.
Cafe, not a coffee shop. Coffee shop, cafe, interchangeable words.
I think cafe is French for coffee, is it not?
I think it is.
There was a lot of that, by the way. There was a lot of me not knowing what was happening and then trying to, because he was plug and play. He was an amazing guest.
That's great.
He just knew, and he has a lot of equipment. And the reason he doesn't make espresso at home is because he doesn't have the right equipment. But very funny. Remember KP Anderson put in an espresso maker into his next to his fridge? Remember that?
No.
In his house? Okay. No. I do because I drink coffee.
Okay.
And he was so psyched about it. Right. But this is a great episode.
I don't drink coffee, so it was okay.
Less powerful. This has been a very long, very meandering bonus about this episode with Connor.
Bonus.
It's a bonus. And the bonus, you should know, it's a Connor, C-O-N-O-R, with... Wait, no, it's Coffee with Dr. Connor.
Yeah, coffee at Coffee with Dr. Connor.
And Dr. Connor is spelled D-R.
And yeah, D-R, C-O-N-O-R, one N, and Connor.
He's got a doctorate.
And coffee.
No. But it was a really fun episode, so I had a good time, and I hope everyone else really liked it.
Well, I did.
And you know the rules out there. Take care of each other. Rangers.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?